Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory The Ranch Club, and Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
KPCW News Time now, 8:13. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council meets early tomorrow, starting at 11:30 at the County Courthouse in Colville. This to begin interviewing applicants for vacancies on both the Eastern Summit County and Snyderville Basin Planning Commissions. In the studio to preview the agenda, Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. That's one of the most important things they do.
Is what? Make appointments?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
well, certainly a lot of the agenda covering those interviews. On the Snyderville Planning Commission, we've got BPEC reapplying. Mike Barnes is not, so two vacancies there.
That's correct.
All right. And then, and I guess just three applicants. And then on the Eastern Summit Planning Commission, we've got two vacancies with 11 applicants. Like,
yeah,
maybe a heads up that a lot's going to happen there?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interest based on the what's been going on with the planning with zoning maps and code out on the east side of the county. So it's very encouraging to see people that have been paying attention and want to apply and participate.
All right. There are two vacancies there, 11 applicants, as I mentioned, Tanya Hansen and Jeff Vernon both reapplying. I also noticed that Rich Sontag's name is on that list. Now, Rich, of course, responsible for some 7,200 acres within the Eastern Planning District. Is there any kind of conflict of interest there?
I don't think so necessarily. You know, there's already a development agreement in place that covers most of what he's responsible for. So, you know, that's something that the Eastern Planning Commission and the attorney's office could sort out as they went along. I think he's a very viable candidate.
All right. Let's see. At 3:30, you'll be moving back into council chambers and a discussion. Probable cost to implement various transportation solutions related to the regional transportation plan. You'll hear from Derek Radke and Caroline Ferris here. So this is probably the third, I think, and last installment then of the transit needs?
Oh, I don't think it's going to be the last installment, Leslie, but certainly the third of what I was looking at as kind of a four-step process. Now we're gonna talk to council about what are the high-level dollar needs and the projects that are behind them that would include transit, road and bridge, as well as operations and maintenance of those systems that we need to plan for in the future as we talk about a possible tax initiative in the fall.
So the staff report divides goals and projects from now to 6 years and then from 6 to 25 years. So let's talk about the immediate stuff, the low-hanging fruit, if you will, and what those are.
Sure. You know, the way that we're looking at it, you know, one of the things that to consider in this is that, you know, any type of funding that we would have to go after would include other levels of funding. I mean, our state and federal partners are a big part of our planning process, as well as private partnerships that might exist in order to bring some solutions to our traffic problems forward. So, you know, when you look at the big numbers of things that could possibly be done, we estimate that if in order to really have an effect, we probably need to start cobbling together upwards of $40 million a year in order to do everything that we possibly could plan to do. You know, of course, that is also based on priorities. So we'll be prioritizing these lists over the next few weeks and figuring out, based on our revenue, what we can possibly do within that that revenue stream.
So you need to look at that. I'll have all of the choices in front of you first before you decide what's immediate and maybe what's more long-term?
Absolutely. And we've kind of taken a first shot at what's most immediate and what's longer-term. But, you know, council needs to weigh in on that as we move forward throughout the year so that we can put together a solid plan.
Well, let's look at some of the suggestions within the staff report. lanes for high-occupancy vehicles or buses. Are we talking about putting these in?
Certainly could be. I mean, this has been a large talk with the with our joint transit advisory board. Possible bus rapid transit, high occupancy vehicle lanes. We've seen other areas like in Aspen, Carbondale area that have done something like this. That's been effective, but you know, that right-of-way purchase could be used for something else, more innovative. It could also be used for something that is being developed by Elon Musk right now, so some larger-scale, innovative fixed guideway type system.
Hyperloop.
It could be. So, you know, those things, we don't want to box out any options at the same time, but we have to move towards something at some point.
All right. So, I mean, where are we talking about for these special lanes? I mean, 224, 248?
Largely 224, 248. But at the same time, what we have to also concentrate are those nodes at the ends and what we do with those. And those could be remote parking, remote transit, transportation hubs. And so we got to give some serious thought to that, too, and the cost of doing that, which it does have a cost.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about those park and ride lots, if you will. I mean, how have we picked ideal locations?
Well, I mean, I think on the 248 side, the park and ride lot that already exists is a logical choice. But there are other places that we could look at. You know, in the longer term, we'd probably be working with Wasatch County in order to site something towards the county line, perhaps in the Mayflower area. But you know, on the west side of the county, we haven't settled on anything yet, and we really need to take a serious look at that. The Blue Ribbon Committee is working on that as well, where those possibilities are and where the best location might be.
Yeah. So when we talk about the western side there, the Snyderville Basin, I mean, what are we talking about in terms of per acre purchases? Expensive.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's going to be some large costs there because there's not large properties left in that area. But the whole idea of trying to capture some of this traffic before it hits the Kimball Junction interchange so that locally we're participating in providing some of that solution. I mean, that Kimball Junction interchange is going to need some large infrastructure work by UDOT in the future anyway, in order to accommodate the traffic that's there now. But if we can reduce that amount some by capturing some perhaps some of that workforce traffic before it even hits that interchange, that might be more of our responsibility.
So when we talk about revamping intersections, that's what we're talking about, Kimball Junction.
That could be one of them, correct?
Yeah. And when we talk about more bus routes and higher frequency, I mean, right now we have a free bus system. Does that mean that we need to start charging to do that?
That's a community choice that needs to be made. You know, in order to get the kind of ridership we have now, which is very good, a free bus system has worked very well. So the community really needs to look at that as we raise revenue. Is there a mix there? Is there other sources of funding we could go after? What is our desire? Do we want to keep it free in order to capture the most ridership we possibly can? I can't tell you the answer to that right now, but I think we're going to know more as the year goes on.
Okay. What I don't see are anything like toll roads. I mean, can you do that? Or because they're state highways, you can't.
Well, I mean, toll roads aren't necessarily state highways. I don't know what the Utah code has as far as toll roads, but you know. One of the guiding principles is that we've heard from the public as we've gone through our planning processes and we talk to our local elected officials is that they really don't want more roads and more places to attract cars. We'd like to use the system we have more efficiently and build alternatives to that so that we don't need to encourage more single occupancy vehicles into the area.
And what we haven't talked about is service to Camas, Colville, or even Heber.
It's we're going to have to, within the next 5 years, in that short-term perspective, we believe, have to start providing service out to some of our more remote areas of the county. Camas is probably the most logical choice based on population density. Plus, we've been working closely with Wasatch County to see if we can work on capturing some of that that density in the transit where it hits 248.
Okay. So again, what's next? I mean, we just need to put everything on the table and then start putting a number
in
front of it?
Well, you know, we've had these high level discussions about what the funding sources are, how to implement them, and now kind of what are the projects or short-term, long-term needs that we have. I think what we're going to ask is that council put together a subcommittee with staff to really look at putting together some options or courses of action that combine all these things together to say, this is what our priorities are, these are the tax sources that we want to go after, and this is how we're going to implement it. And there's probably several ways to put that together when you're considering bonding scenarios and different things. So we're going to look at that and probably bring something back to council hopefully in March in order to start discussing that more in detail.
Yeah. Now, do we have those studies back? That, I mean, I think Park City's got three underway.
Well,
I don't know if you're partnering with any of those.
I think the area, as we hear, we've studied a lot of things over the years, so we have a lot of information in back of us. I mean, people always ask me, you know, why aren't we waiting for the long range transportation plan to be done? Well, the long range transportation plan is more of a countywide document, a communication tool with our state and federal partners. So, you know, this first step of looking for local funding is a way to leverage those things. So it's not necessary that we have that plan done in order to know what we need to do and what we need to fund. We just need to put together our leverage plan.
Okay. Real quick, the county's Wilderness Initiative Plan that's been resubmitted to Congressman Rob Bishop's office?
It has. We the council broadcast a letter to Congressman Bishop at the end of last week in order to start the conversation about what the council feels is they feel strongly about their proposal and what they saw lacking in the draft legislation. So, you know, I've read a couple articles over the weekend that kind of said, you know, the Bishop's office is saying, well, it's just a draft at this point. There's a lot more to come before it actually gets to be a numbered bill. And I think we just wanted to get in on that early and make sure that we have some as much influence as we possibly can over that final language.
Have you heard any back from his office verbally or in writing?
I don't know if we've heard anything back. I was in Yellowstone this weekend, so I was a little bit incommunicado.
Okay. Last week, Dave Allen with Boyer Tech Park said that he was holding some preliminary talks with the county. What can you tell us about those?
Well, I mean, I think he's going through the process with Boyer in order to get Skull Candy approved. As far as that project, I'm not sure exactly what you know. We're always talking to the Boyer folks about the uses for the Boyer Tech Park. There's a lot of ideas that have floated around the community. Some of them good, some of them interesting. As what could happen with that property in the future? It's been a long time since that development agreement was put in place. The council has indicated that if there are some other possibilities, they'd like to look at them, but nothing in specific yet.
Yeah. So has Dave Allen usurped the process here by dealing with you? I mean, the final decision maker.
Not on Skull Candy. I mean, we've had some conversations from a high level perspective, but you know, it's characterized that I've made decisions. There's no decisions that have been made. I have a role in the process with the current development agreement, and you know, if I do that kind of stuff, I can violate some process, and I don't want to do that. So there haven't been any conversations that could be characterized that way.
Okay. You're wearing a big Move 2050 button.
This is
what's this?
Big long-range transportation plan effort. So we started that effort last week with an open house, and the executive committee of that transportation plan, countywide transportation plan, will be meeting this week for the first time, and we're kicking off the process so that we can get that document done by the end of the year.
So by that year, many of us are going to need one of the senior citizen buses. You're going to have more of those online.
We'll need a lot of different things by that year.
Okay. Tom, anything else you want to mention?
No, that's great. Thanks, Leslie.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Thanks. KPCW News Time now, 8:29. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, between now and February 29th, Summit and Wasatch County residents have the opportunity to purchase a smart thermometer known as thermostat known as an Ecobee. That will help reduce their power bill and save energy. In the studio with details about this bulk purchase, I have the project manager from Summit Community Power Works, Mary Krista Smith, along with Matt Mullen, who owns several of these Ecobees. Good morning to both of you.
Thank you, Leslie.
Morning.
So, MC, you start with us and tell us what deal Summit Community Power Works is offering here.
So we have partnered with Ecobee, which is a smart thermostat producer out of Toronto, Canada, and they have given us a great price on their smart thermostat. So regularly they're $249, and we are selling them, if you take advantage of the rebate we offer along with the Questar rebate, they're $112.
Plus tax.
Plus tax.
Okay. But people have to buy them by the end of the month. Why the deadline?
We are doing it as a bulk purchase, and that's how we got the price down. And we also want to instill a sense of urgency so that people will take the action now and not delay.
Okay. And then the $100 rebate from Questar, that's good at least through the month then?
It's good through the end of the year. We've checked with Questar. There are only two thermostats that are applicable for the Questar rebate, and the Ecobee 3 is one of those.
All right. So it's pretty easy. I mean, I bought one using PayPal. Installing it, however, Matt, you've got them. Can I install it myself?
Yeah, they're really easy. They come with a great set of instructions. You can plug them right into your existing system. They're very user-friendly. I actually wish I would have waited now. That's a great price. But we put a few in our house, and they look great. I like them better from a design standpoint than the Nest, which is why I went there. And they also work a little better if you use iPhone.
All right. Well, let's tell me, you say you have several in your house. Your house isn't that large, is it?
No, we zoned our house so that we could control the different rooms at different temperatures. And so we put one for each zone in our house, which is fairly common. Each thermostat you have in your house will control one zone. The Ecobees do come with this neat little remote sensor that you can link to it. So we have one big zone, and we put a remote sensor on the other side of the room, so that the thermostat will try to kind of find a happy medium between two different spots in the room.
Is that necessary, though?
No. You can just run them in our smallest zone in our bathroom. We just have the one Ecobee, and it works just fine.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, I'm going to be replacing a programmable thermostat. I mean, it comes on the morning. It goes off a few hours later. It doesn't come on until early evening. And then, again, it drops to 60 overnight like it does during the day. So if I want it warmer when the furnace isn't on, I just use a small space heater and heat the space that I'm in. So I've been told that this is I'm still going to save up to 20%. And I find that hard to believe because, you know, I mean, if I'm there right now, I have the heat off and I use a smaller space heater. If I'm there, this smart thermostat's going to know I'm there and is going to kick the heat up.
Well, you can actually program it a number of ways. It can sense that you're there, but you can program it based on any time schedule you want. Sun patterns, sunsets, sunrises, it's pretty smart. You could also link it to your phone. So from sitting here at work, you could say, you know, I'm coming home in an hour and turn it on directly from your phone.
And it's that easy?
Yes, Siri will do it for you. In the case of Ecobee 3, you could just talk to Siri and she'll do it.
All right. What have you noticed in terms of savings?
Well, honestly, we've just moved into this new house that we've spent about a year and a half building. So I haven't had anything to compare it against. But coming from our older thermostats, again, the design is quite nice, but the efficiency is great. And I like the way that it links up over Wi-Fi so we can kind of adjust things as we go on a trip or, you know, we know a hot day is coming, let's say. These last few days have been strange, so we've turned them all down.
Okay, and again, you just do it with your phone, huh?
Yeah, just say, hey, Siri, turn down the temperature to whatever you want. It's really cool.
Interesting. So, Mary Krista, you're hoping to sell 1,001 of these thermostats. Why that number?
Because we get a break after 1,000. We get a $10 break per thermostat that would cover all of our PayPal costs. So we're hoping to get to 1,001 so that we aren't so that we're able to cover those costs. And I will say it is the biggest opportunity for those in the county who are participating with our quest for the Georgetown Prize to reduce their gas consumption. It's the easiest thing that people can do. Windows are more challenging. Insulation and weather sealing are more challenging. But this is one simple fix that can save you 20% on your bill.
Yeah. So again, as you mentioned, it's all about winning the $5 million Georgetown University Prize. How is that going to help? You're just saying that the reduction in natural gas is going to put it, you know, a mark on
it will put a mark, and it's the biggest opportunity, frankly. When you look at the numbers for Park City and where are we consuming, we consume most of our energy through heating our homes. We live at a high altitude. We have large homes. And so when we make a dent in the natural gas consumption, it makes a tremendous difference. And so this is the simplest way to move the needle in reference to natural gas.
Yeah. So where are we? Do we know with regard to the Georgetown? Because last we had talked, we were like in sixth place, down from first.
We are still waiting for them to roll in the fourth quarter of data. So we are in sixth place, according to Georgetown, with three quarters of data or 9 months of 2015.
Now, you and several other of the 49 cities that are communities that are part of this recently sent a letter to Georgetown, saying, you guys get it together, have they? Maybe you can explain why you sent the letter.
Well, one of the reason that we sent the letter, and there were over a quarter of the communities that signed on to this letter, is because the data reporting from Georgetown has been late, and it's hard to understand, and it's not been very meaningful data. And when we are trying to motivate our community and see where we stand in regard to other communities, as well as report back to our funders and report back to our city and county governments as to how we're doing, we have not had the data that has been useful in that regard. This is their one deliverable that they promised, and they haven't been able to do it. And we understand that the dashboard is complicated and what have you, but we've asked for them to simplify their reporting and get us meaningful, accurate data, because we want the results to be credible. We want people to be able to believe in the results that are given. And so, you know, again, they've said, we're going to address your concerns. I have my fingers crossed, but we're just going to keep charging ahead and doing what we implementing our program and doing what we need to do regardless. But we would like to see more accurate reporting.
So they have given a response to the letter then. You've at least seen that.
Yes, and it's kind of the same response that they've been giving all along. So we'll see what happens. In a week, it should be better. We'll see.
And certainly, I mean, it's the whole idea was to come up with a program or a plan that any community in the country could basically implement to see a reduction in both natural gas and electricity use. That's not, however, the only marker in winning the prize. So what else are they going to be looking at?
They are looking, so 25% of the score are hard metrics at the meter reductions in consumption. But they're also looking for programs that are replicable, scalable, that create ongoing reductions, and that are innovative. And they want to see that not only are the municipal governments reducing their consumption, but especially the everyday resident. And this is the opportunity for our community to really prove that they are on board with our sustainability goals and are willing to take the action in their own homes to get us there. Recently, a large contingent came out to city council and asked and really demanded that Park City have a very aggressive energy goal of net zero by 2032. And this is one way to get us there. When we lower our consumption, it's much easier to make the leap to renewables. So if people in the community are serious about reducing our impact and having better air and water quality, this is the opportunity. Buy your Ecobee thermostat this month by the 29th and help us win that $5 million so that we can implement the changes to get us to our 2032 goal.
Okay. They can just go online and it's basically a click of a button?
www.scpw.org. And right when you open that screen, it'll have a buy now button and it'll give you two options essentially of thermostats, one for your everyday resident. And if you're a property manager, we have the EMSSI. It allows you to access an unlimited number of accounts for free. So you can manage all of your property's thermostats through one portal. You don't have to go into the units, and they will send you alerts if it's left on too high or if the furnace goes out. So for second homeowners and property managers, it's a tremendous advantage.
So those commercial ones are also on, on sale or discount?
Yes. Down from $400 to $270.
Okay,
a big difference.
Have you seen a demand for those?
We have heard great demand for those, and what happens with the property managers is they tend to need to go to their owners and get that permission. So a number of property managers at Deer Valley, Rhonda Sedaris, are all in the process of educating and asking their their customers to invest.
I think that's one of the neatest things I've noticed about these is that little warning. You'd be walking around. We've got some contractors coming to the house still working. They'll leave the garage door open, and our thermostat in the garage will text me or email me and say, hey, you know, check your system. Maybe something's wrong, but the temperature in the garage is too low. So for a property manager, maybe a real estate agent, somebody that sort of helps folks with their homes around here, it's like unbelievably easy to deal with and a big improvement.
Hmm. And second homeowners then could be, you know, East Coast and still manage their thermostats.
Absolutely, yeah. Because we've all heard stories of people who don't live here full time and their pipes freeze because their furnace went out and the damage that happens. And when you get a notice within half an hour of it dropping below a certain temperature, that is a tremendous advantage.
It's really cool.
Okay, scpw.org.
Correct.
Between now and the end of the month.
Do it today.
Matt, Mary Krista, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lizzie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:41. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher, and in the studio with a monthly update in Zarepan with Recycle Utah. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you, as they were leaving, you had said, ask me about what to do with light bulbs and thermostats.
Indeed, let's start with that just to get it out of the way. There seems to be great confusion as to which light bulb is recyclable and which is not. In short, none of them are. The incandescent light bulb are the old-fashioned ones. They're just garbage. No need to bring them to us. There is no way to take the filaments away from the glass, from the metal. So just throw them in your garbage, and I hope you don't have any more of those. If you do have the CFLs, if you do have the light tubes, and if you now have the new LEDs already, there is a trace of toxins in there, and we would like for you to drop them off either at Recycle Utah or at the hazmat event, the collections that we have. When it comes to thermostats, listen up, everybody. I don't care what kind it is. Just when in doubt, drop it off at the center or at the hazmat event. We see a lot of thermostats, the old ones, with huge amounts of mercury in them. Just to be safe, just bring them all to us. We'll sort them out.
Okay. Let's talk about the recycle center itself. You're seeing the numbers go up.
We definitely see the numbers go up. Of course, we are pretty unique in that we're not just a drop-off center. We have many other programs going, which is why we call ourselves the CHARM Center. Of course, we're charming every day, but CHARM stands for Center for Hard-to-Recycle Materials, and thus that does include things like the EPS, the white blocks of foam, of which we see so, so many more. And it's really a labor of love. It takes a long time to densify those. And if you ever wanted to come in and see that, come on by. We'll show you how that works. Of course, the amazing thing is that we have a National Battery Day. I had no idea that we needed one, but it's a really good thing. Happens to be February 18th. And please know, again, that Recycle Utah accepts any kind of battery. If you look at your little battery, there's usually sign language on there, and one of them is the outline of a garbage can with a big X through it, and that just means don't throw them in the garbage. Please bring them to us or, again, to the hazmat event. And
also, let me ask you about this. With winter and, boy, some ice building up due to the warm temperatures, in terms of putting what to put down on your frozen driveway. You say that there's some things that are better than others?
Definitely. There are a lot of salts on there. Some of them are even named eco salt. They might be a little bit more expensive. But for those of you who have pets, especially dogs, be aware that it can hurt their paws. Be aware that the runoff that you are creating that goes into our stormwater is not being checked, is not being cleaned up. And if you just take the cheapest salt, it's not always the best. So read the labels, make a better choice for not just your pets, but for the environments by going the safer route and pay the extra buck.
Well, and we've heard from Mike Lures from the Water Reclamation District about the amount of salt that they're seeing and
about how
to get rid of it.
It has a huge impact on not just the sewer district, but also what we leave behind in the stormwater drains. Very serious problem.
All right. It's a legislative session, and I don't know that. Are you working with a lobbyist to try and
get... We are not. As a nonprofit, we cannot work with a lobbyist. However, we can advocate, which we do every year. And we just were on the Hill last week through the UNA Day on the Hill. And we have representatives that we talk to, certainly ours locally. We try to talk to our senators. That's a little bit more difficult, but we try. They have all gotten the information on our four issues. And those are, hard to get through. We are in Utah, but still we remind our elected officials what is important to consider. First and foremost, it is a bottle bill, and that's the kind of thing that you find in California, Hawaii, and Michigan, where you pay 5 or 10 cents more at the point of purchase than anything from a beer bottle to a water bottle to a soda can would be exchangeable for the 10 or 5 cents that you have paid for it. And it's a great, great way to clean up our freeways, expressways, and anything in between.
So do you have anything that's even presented to them?
Yes, we have bottle bills from all other states. All they have to do is take a look at it. There's no fiscal note attached to that, so it's really easy. And just exchange Michigan for Utah. It works.
Yeah, but don't you need a sponsor to do that?
We do, and that is something hard to get. However, there is a movement when it comes to plastic bags. I'm not sure where that is going. Again, it doesn't just affect us locally. It affects anyone. And there was a great story about the plastic that's swimming around New York. It's everywhere, and it affects everybody and everything. So a reduction would be a good thing. Another one, of course, that we are working on even locally and on a broader scale, is the ban on styrofoam-related food packaging, such as the clamshells, the cups, the hot cups, the plates. And we have a great collaboration with the PC Caps program at the moment, which is quite wonderful. The kids are working on it and keeping it going, making hopefully our entire school system styrofoam-free. And it's really not styrofoam. Styrofoam is the blue and pink stuff, the insulation. What we're talking about is the stuff, soft white stuff that is not recyclable. It cannot be densified. So we do not accept that at the center.
So tell me the again, do you have a bill here, or are you just giving them information? I mean,
no, we have a bill because we know that not just New York and San Francisco that are usually the leaders in something environmental whatsoever, but we also have Washington, D.C. that just banned it, and they did it within 30 days. That was pretty radical stuff. And that is to protect their children's brains and yours and mine as well. And the bills are written, again, it is... We don't have sponsors, no, if that's your question. We don't.
Yeah, so why does it have to go through the state? Why can't Park City or Summit County just do it on their own?
We could. Indeed, we could. And we certainly have approached people locally. But as you know, there are other priorities. So we keep plugging along with it, reminding folks that this is important for all of us. And we'll see what happens.
Okay, and then another bill that you're talking about is what you're calling an e-waste bill. And this would be similar to like what we do with used tires. You get the money up front.
Exactly. What you do is you charge, you buy a new computer, you give them, I don't know, 10, 20 bucks ahead of time, and then at the end of its useful life, you can just drop it off at certain collection centers. Again, these bills exist in other states. We only have to implement it here. We did have a bill in front all the way up to the Senate committee about 4 or 5 years ago that was voted down. We're going to go back. This is just a reminder that even though we do recycle your corrugated cardboard, we're also advocates for bigger and more important things.
Okay. And then coming up, Earth Day, back is in April. We can talk about that more later. But
yes,
yeah.
Yes, indeed. Just a reminder, we're planning a really countywide event with Earth Day, April 22nd. And yes, there will be the usual dinner that we have in collaboration with the Wasatch Brew Pub, but there will hopefully be more and better. And since we mentioned a lot of the hazmat items, put this in your calendar. May the 7th is the collection day at the canyons. But if you have meds now, you can always drop them off at the police station 24/7. And our Summit County landfill, the 3 Mile Canyon landfill in Wanchib, does accept residential hazardous waste any day.
Okay.
Except for Sundays.
We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Sin Zarepan, director of Recycle Utah. Eight young athletes from Park City are in Lillehammer, Norway, competing in the 2016 Youth Olympic Games that started last week. In the studio with details, the director of free skiing and development for Team Park City United, Chris Haslock. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So half of the kids are from Team Park City United?
Yeah, pretty significant. We have half of that. That's correct. I'm a little off my game because I'm focused on, we have some incredible news. Today in Lillehammer, Ben Loomis won a silver medal for Nordic jumping. So that's the first thing I wanted to get out there. So make sure we get the news fresh, and then we can talk about the rest of our athletes.
Okay. So Ben is what with the...
Ben's with the Park City Nordic Ski Club. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so we have actually three of the nine members of the Youth Sports Alliance, three of the different organizations have representation there. So it's definitely a community-wide event that's happening. It's pretty cool.
Okay. So, of course, Nordic combined, that's with a cross-country race and a ski jump, huh?
Correct. That is correct.
All right. What about the kids from Team Park City United?
So we have actually four athletes that qualified in slopestyle, two of them for the U.S. We have Alex Hall and Nikita Rubaki. And they competed earlier this week in the half pipe, which, interestingly enough, as I mentioned, they qualified in slopestyle, but they were also given a start in the half pipe, and they both finished fourth place. So to just miss the podium in the event that is not necessarily their stronger event, I think gives them a lot of confidence and a lot of excitement going into their big event at the end of the week, which is slopestyle. We also have from Team Chile, Ben Garces and his sister Valentina Garces, who both have been living in Park City for 3 years now, and training with Team Park City United. So that's super exciting for them. They worked hard to try and qualify, because you have to qualify. There's only 22 athletes that even got in slopestyle, so it's a pretty big deal to be able to qualify at all.
Okay, so when slopestyle being run?
The slopestyle events will be run at the end of the week, and the 19th will be the ladies' event. And then on the 20th will be the men's event for skiing. And then the inverse of that for snowboarding happening on those same days.
Okay. But Ben and Valentina didn't get into the half pipe?
They have very little training in half pipe. They have competed, but they have not done enough to really make a difference yet in half pipe. Their focus has definitely been slopestyle.
And we also have some kids from the Wasatch Luge Club. When do we find out how they've done, or have they competed yet?
They have competed, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have Duncan Biles, who finished eighth in the doubles. We have, along with Alonson Owen, his partner. And we also have Ashley Fakwarson from the Luge team, who is in the singles. Unfortunately, she did not finish, but was able to at least enter the event. And we have the team relay that happened today in Lillehammer as well. And the team relay finished 10th.
Okay. So still to come, we'll see, Alex and Nikita compete later
in the week. Alex and Nikita, yeah. And also just a note, their teammates finished, and Burke Irving, who is from Winter Park, who's trained here a bit in Park City, won the gold medal in the halfpipe for the U.S., and then Paula Cooper, who is also from Colorado, won the silver medal.
Okay. So who went with the kids? I mean, parents, coaches? Or
There are some parents that are there. A lot of them just went with their teams, though. As far as coaches, we do have John Owen from the Wasatch Luge Club that is out there. And John was a teammate of mine in the 1988 Olympics. So that's pretty cool that he is out there, with the Luge group. And then we have Blake Hughes from Park City Nordic Ski Club, who is attending as a coach as well. So,
all right. And anybody from Team Park City United?
No, because the U.S. team, there are very few credentials that were given out, and so they sent their rookie team coaches to take care of it. And it was also a commitment; you had to be there from the opening ceremonies all the way through to the end of the games. So, it would have been a pretty big sacrifice for us to send one of our coaches for that amount of time. So the Chileans are working with the Argentina national team, and then our U.S. athletes are working with the U.S. national team.
Great. So, again, they had to qualify to get into this?
Absolutely.
Do what? And when other regional qualifications? Or
Each sport has their own qualification process. But for the U.S., it was the top-ranked skiers and the international, which we call the AFP, as far as the U.S. free skiing athletes. So it's basically the highest-ranked international athlete of the age group. And it's a pretty tight age group. So it's basically 15 to 17.
Yeah, and I was going to ask that. I mean, given the ages and the tight frame of the ages and only happening once every 4 years, I mean, you've got kids that are just missing this by months? Or
yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. And I don't know if the Olympic Committee will think about, you know, broadening that out so they give everybody one chance to qualify in. We were fortunate enough to have some athletes that qualified out of Park City, you know, for snowboarding and skiing the first time that it happened. But then, yeah, there, like you said, there's kind of it's a tough window there to try and get in.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to let us know?
No, just mostly, you know, I think a lot of our success has to do with the wonderful venue partners that we all have here. So, you know, really want to thank, you know, Park City Mountain Resort, Deer Valley Resort, the Utah Olympic Park, the Center of Excellence we use, Black Diamond Gymnastics, Park City Ice Arena, White Pine Touring, Basin Recreation, and Mountain Trails Foundation. And, you know, without all of these people supporting youth sports and offering us the opportunity to take advantage of their wonderful venues, we certainly wouldn't be able to do the job that we do to try and prepare these athletes for international competition.
Okay. Hatch, thanks for coming by.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
That's the Director of Free Skiing and Development for Team Park City United, Chris Hatch Haslock. KPCW News Time now, 8:58.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jans Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory the Ranch Club and Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.